Hey, it's Jeremy Piven here. You're watching Life Minute TV.
You may know him best from his Emmy and Golden Globe winning performance in Entourage, or from the dozens of diverse roles he's played on stage and screen, or his hysterical stand-up comedy acts he's taken on the road for years. We were fortunate to have Jeremy Piven stop by the Life Minute studios this week while in town for his New York stop at Sony Hall this coming Sunday to tell us all about it and more.
I was on a date with a woman. She was age appropriate. Don't look at me like that, bro. And she said to me, she goes, "I don't date actors." I said, "Why?" She goes, "You never know when they're acting." I said, "Look, I'm here with you. I care about you. You're my world. I'm empathetic towards you. There's no one else." Line!
Jeremy Piven in the house.
Yes.
Woo! All right. How are you living?
Oh, man, I'm living the dream. Absolutely peaking at this moment. It's all come together for us. We're exactly where we're supposed to be. I'm a festival of cliches. That's okay.
It. Well, you're in New York on your stand-up comedy tour.
Yes.
How's that been going?
Oh, fantastic. I love doing stand-up. I've just been on the streets of New York. It's raining out there, and there's so much energy. I basically, whenever I get to a new town, I just start walking and getting and just see what happens. And then I take all that energy and whatever happens and I put it on stage. I was just in Boston at the Wilbur Theater and I was outside like a dummy taking a selfie because I was on the marquee and it's already embarrassing. And then I hear, "Yo, man," and I look over and there's this dude sitting there and he goes, "Me and my girl loved you in a Rush Hour." And he goes, "Let me ask you a question, man. Can you do that scene for me, man?" I was like, "I'm sorry." He goes, "Do that scene. You were the gay Versace salesman. Me and my girl love that scene." I go, "Bro, I'm sorry, that's like a 7-minute scene." And he stands up and he's like the size of Aaron Judge. And I was like, "So you've got the mochaccino skin and the big broad shoulders. Let's put a dead animal on you. Buttercream, buttercream, cracked skin, buttercream. What's below the waist?" And I do the whole scene for him. And I take that and I put it right on stage. So if you just leave your home, only good things can happen. You just got to get
improv
out of the house. Yeah, improv and madness and weirdness, and you can use all of it.
And Sony Hall this Sunday, October 19th.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, I've been working forever, and people come up to me after my shows, and they say, "We didn't know you were this funny," which is this amazing backhanded compliment, because I've been doing this forever, and it just makes me feel incredible that, like, you know, all the roles that I played, I've just been so lucky and fortunate to do. And I've always attempted to, you know, give them some alternate dialogue or a joke or something. And, you know, it's always about, like, when's the right time to pitch it? And the thing about stand-up is it's total and utter freedom. You know, it's just you alone on a mic. You're a one-person band. And, you know, be careful what you wish for. It's incredible freedom. It's me. I'm not playing a character. And if you want to know who I am, come to Sony Hall on the 19th.
Awesome. Can't wait. I can't wait. And like you said, you've played such diverse roles, and you've done everything from Broadway to the big screen, like 80-something movies. The other day, I was trying to make a list. I'm like, "Oh my God, there's that one and that one and that one." And you're either the guy, like, you love you or you hate you. That's how good you are. Such a testament to your talent.
Well, those are both strong emotions, and and I'm glad that you feel that. I mean, all I know is that when you play these characters, you never judge your characters. You just commit to them, because it's an interesting take on life, really, that no one's the devil in their own story. I don't think these evil people think they're evil. And so if you're playing a bad guy, you give them as much integrity as you possibly can. And you take judgment out of the equation, which is what we should be doing in life as well. I think, you know, that's the way to really be free, is to live without judgment. And, you know, I think we're, and I don't mean to get too philosophical or deep or weird right now, but I think we're either living in times or just coming out of times where people are so attached to their judgments and it's their identity. And they just want to find the oppressor. Anyone will do. Find them and then just start railing against them publicly. And it's kind of like, well, hold on a second. Wait, what's going on here, guys? Because I don't have all the facts. I just want to know the truth. And so, you know, it's just really, really interesting times. And I don't know how I made that leap from you saying you love or hate me. What's so interesting to me is, you know, living this life, I've been a journeyman actor. I went to NYU and went to school here. I started studying at 8 years old. I've studied all over the world, Shakespeare at National Theatre of Great Britain, Second City with Chris Farley in the 90s. I've been all over the map, and it's my job and my honor to inhabit characters fully. And so I think what's happened with me, which is fascinating, is I don't want to even think about or put too much energy into how I'm viewed, but I know that these characters that I played have really landed with people, and they get confused and maybe think that I am that character, which to me is preposterous. And yet I can't judge them. You know, if the result, I mean, my mother, who's been my acting teacher since I was 8 years old, when I was rehearsing the pilot of Entourage with her, she was testing me on my lines, and she said, "This is going to be a series, and I know how you commit, and people are going to think you are this character with the way you commit." And I was just like, "Oh, you're crazy, Mom. That's so paranoid." And boy, was she right. You know, that's out of my control, and that's something that I think about. But it's interesting what happens when they do that. But what's interesting to me on a creative level is it started to get in my way a bit, and people thought, okay, well, that's what you do, and that's who you are. It's like, well, no, I did 40 movies before Entourage. I never played Ari Gold before. I played the gay Versace salesman.
You got the mochaccino face, wonderful skin, and the big broad shoulders, okay? Let's put a dead animal on you. Croc skin, buttercream, buttercream, croc skin, buttercream. What size is the waist? Let's go in.
Hey!
So I basically played Lloyd before I played Ari. So there's a lot of range there, and I'm a stage actor. So I just look forward to working with creative people who get it, who understand. And yeah, it's exciting.
Well, it's a true testament to your talent too, obviously.
Well, thank you. It's been a bit confusing.
I bet. And of course, your mom, famous Joyce, and your dad, Byrne, Piven Theater, your company, you're a hardcore theater kid. You grew up in theater.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, it was great. It was great. I jumped up on stage and I had no reference for even where I was, which is kind of amazing. I, 8 years old, got up and started butchering Chekhov with my parents. And they needed a kid, and so they grabbed me and John Cusack, and we would alternate the roles, you know, from one night to the next. And we were just up there having fun, and we didn't even really know where we were. We just kind of kept going. So it wasn't like I was thinking, there's something unique and different, and this is a means to an end to become an actor, or my parents weren't stage parents. They loved the theater. It was their lives, and teaching and nurturing talent and being supportive was who they were. And I just got incredibly lucky. I must have picked my parents. And I just kind of grew up on the stage. And by the time I got to college, I was 10 years into my journey as an actor. And so as a freshman, I got up on stage at Drake University, which is where I went first. I ended up at NYU and whatnot. But I got up there, and it was the first time I had perspective on how lucky I was where I came from.
I'm sorry about your mom's passing too. You know, you were so close. You had the ultimate teacher. She really ran lines with you.
Absolutely, I ran lines with my mom.
Everything that I've said is Ari Gold, I've said to my mother's face. I swear to you, because she's my acting teacher, so I run lines. I don't do lines with her, I run lines with her, right? So like from back in the day, she never cracked. No matter what I said as that character, I said some of the most vulgar, offensive and my mom just stayed in the pocket, right? Just brilliant. I'm a mama's boy, clearly.
I ran lines with my mom all the time. She, you know, right up until her last breath. That's what artists do. They continue to create and evolve, and she was gracious up until her last breath.
It's beautiful and it's rare. And your sister is also a director. And
yes.
I have to ask you about the performance.
Yeah.
Arthur Miller's last short story before he died.
Yeah.
Your mom brought that to you and said this would be a good role. Can you tell us about that?
My mother was always looking for new material. That's one of the things she did at the Piven Theater, was she would identify material, whether they be plays or short stories or any type of fascinating poems, works of art. And she was a voracious reader and a Shakespeare scholar and an expert on Shakespeare and on Chekhov. And she found the performance out of the New Yorker, this beautiful short story, gave it to me and said, there's a role in here for you. And her words are so powerful, and I immediately read it and just was completely blown away. And at its core, it's about the idea of how much of ourselves will we compromise to be successful. And I think we navigate that all the time. And my character is willing to risk it all and hide his identity as a Jewish tap dancer in Brooklyn. And he finds himself in Germany, in Berlin in 1937, and comes face to face with this brilliant actor, Robert Carlyle, who was so perfect in this role. And my character hides his identity to dance for Hitler. It's the best work of my life, and you know, we look to have it out early next year. It's been a 15-year process, and it's been great.
And you learned to tap dance?
I learned to tap dance from a local tap dancer here named Jared Grimes, who's a genius, been on Broadway many times. Yeah, he was my tap teacher, and he was incredibly patient with me, bless him. And yeah, I somehow pulled it off.
You're amazing. It looks amazing. And you had to go to Arthur Miller's daughter, Rebecca, to obtain the rights, right? Rebecca, of course, is married to Daniel Day-Lewis. And of course, it's been all over the news that he just came out of retirement to act in his son's new movie.
I've been watching Daniel Day-Lewis and his son. It's so beautiful. And he's even said one of the reasons why he did this film with his son was to spend more time with his son. It's like, it's incredible. What a huge heart. And so I went to Daniel Day-Lewis's wife, Rebecca Miller, and I had to get the rights to the performance. And so she was on the phone, and I could hear Daniel Day-Lewis in the background, who is the greatest living actor. And it just was wildly intimidating. And somehow I got lucky, and she, you know, granted me the rights. And I had my sister, Shira Piven, adapt it and direct it. And it's the best work of my life, and she's the best director I've ever worked with. And it's funny, you hear people like, what was it like working with your sister? Was it like working with a female director? And I'm like, female director? Oh, okay, that's right. Female director. Like, for me, I don't think in those terms, because my first director was my mom, and she's so incredible. It's like, well, how is a female director different than a male director? I know they're incredible. I know they're the best I've ever worked with. You know what I mean? So there's a lens that people have that I don't even understand. I was the only white boy on my football team. I grew up in an integrated culture outside of Chicago. And so I came by all of this knowledge that we're all the same intrinsically because I lived it. And now we're living in times where people are so desperate to prove their empathy, to do these performative gestures, to prove how decent they are. It's like, well, you know, I just would rather you be that way. You know what I mean? It's like the lady doth protest too much. Why are you putting all of your energy into telling us who you are? Why don't you show me who you are? Who are you? So that's a very long-winded way of saying I got incredibly lucky, and I can't wait to get it out and for people to have these conversations, because I think we're also going through some interesting times where people are confused about history and about maybe there's some anti-Semitism. What is that about exactly? I think truly one of the variables to racism and anti-Semitism of any kind is the lack of knowledge of who other people are in their culture. And I was just lucky to be immersed where people didn't look like me where I grew up. And so I got to learn firsthand what these other beautiful cultures are like. And so with the performance, it can be used to show you the absurdity of anti-Semitism. Because, you know, you can do an interview, you can do a TED Talk, you can do a tweet or an op-ed or whatever, but there's nothing like telling a story. That's what I do. People are like, why are you so silent on certain issues? Silence is violence. It's like, well, the way that I contribute to this conversation is by doing what I do. What am I qualified to do or to speak about? Well, I've been an actor my whole life. I'm a storyteller. So that's what I'm qualified to do. So I'm taking all this energy and putting it towards a piece that will illuminate the absurdity of anti-Semitism. And also just standing on its own is just a beautiful story and a beautifully told story. So that's how I contribute this. And from the film will come longer conversations, which I'm honored to have. You know, it's funny, I had this critic at one of the screenings said after the film, you know, it's all going to be different for you now. I said, really? She said, yeah, I mean, your choices are going to have to be different, because she saw what I'm capable of doing and what this role is and the impact. And I hear people gasp when they watch this film, and standing ovations and all these other things that I, and reviews that I've never personally witnessed, even though I've been lucky enough to win awards and play roles that have, you know, by some people have defined me. Some people think I am Ari Gold. Well, okay, watch the performance. And all the reviews say I disappeared into this role. Well, they don't know me. So I reappeared into the role, because that role is closer to me than anything I've ever done in my life. So that's who I am. Ari Gold exists. His name is Ari Emanuel. And he represents Mark Wahlberg, and he owns the UFC and the WWE, and he's Ari Gold. And he's somewhere right now screaming at someone. It's adorable.
It's funny. I heard they said, you know, Diane Keaton was a little bit of herself, who we just lost recently,
yeah,
in all of her movies.
Oh, would you she say was a that, lot of herself.
Would you say that about you?
I would say you try to disappear as much as you possibly can into these roles. And you try to service the role and the piece on the highest level possible. And, you know, we're spirits having a human experience. And so it's being informed by your spirit. So I can't tell you, you know, how much of it shows up, but you do whatever it takes to make that moment alive and to make it all work. I remember even during Entourage, the phone wasn't ringing as much as I would have liked to have. And I got some feedback from my agent. He said, the people I'm talking to are seeing Entourage and they feel like it's too good. Like, that's what I was like, I'm sorry. Say that one more time. It's too good. Yeah, he goes, hey, they just don't think it's acting. Oh, okay, what? Oh, is it a documentary? God. Is it? Okay, was it a work of fiction? It's all fiction. It's all written. I did it word for word, word for word. In fact, if I didn't hit it word for word, the great Doug Ellen who wrote it, I would have to go again, and it was my honor. So it's a work of fiction. So that's the ultimate compliment. It's a backhanded compliment, but, you know, it's a funny one, because if you can live fully in a character and make it incredibly authentic, that means you can play other characters authentically. So I didn't understand the logic.
Tell us about Primitive War.
Listen, my mission is to get my men home, not fight dinosaurs.
Primitive War is a beautiful, crazy film that's out right now for the first time on different platforms, that is a mashup of different timelines. It's a Vietnam War movie that suddenly turns into a dinosaur movie, blood and guts, R-rated. People love it. It's crazy and wild and funny and absurd.
It looks fun.
Yeah.
What's your very first movie you ever saw?
First movie that I ever saw was Apocalypse Now in the movie theaters, and I was a kid, and I just thought, how is that even possible? That was one of those times where I was like, this isn't a movie. I don't even know what this is. They're going down the river in Vietnam, and what is Marlon Brando? What is that creation of this dark, amazing, charismatic, strange force that is in and out of the shadows? You know, he was just otherworldly and brilliant, and they all were. And it was, you know, the idea of, like, that was a movie that was something that you could even attempt to do. It was so far away and such a dream that I thought I just stayed on the stage and just kept grinding until I got my first movie. Then ironically, Martin Sheen, the lead in Apocalypse Now, his son, Charlie Sheen, then I'm on a set, I'm 18 years old, and I played football in high school, and then I got to put the pads on again and play a football player in Lucas, and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know this, it could be this good. Like, I get paid to act, and I get to play a football player. I'm living the dream. At that moment, Charlie, Hollywood came to town. I was like, oh my God, Charlie Sheen, this is Martin Sheen's son. And he goes, dude, the only way I'm going to make it through this movie, dude, is if I have a 12-pack and a big fat joint, dude. And I was like, what? You have to be medicated to live the dream? That doesn't sound right. And the director came over and he goes, Charlie, we're going to get right on that 12-pack and that joint. And Charlie goes, dude, God. I forgot I was mic'd, dude. So he came out of the womb just with surging with tiger blood.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.